podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, culés. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. In today's episode, we dissect that exciting classical result from last night, as Barca are now 12 points clear of Madrid. Before we dive into today's show, a quick word from our sponsor, NordVPN. Are you tired of hackers and cybercriminals snooping around your online activities? Do you want to safely access your favorite shows and content from anywhere in the world? Then you need NordVPN, the best VPN on the market. And the good news is that there's an exclusive birthday deal just for you. Buy NordVPN now and win extra subscription time. With NordVPN, you can protect your online activity and keep your private information away from prying eyes. And if you're traveling abroad, don't worry. Connect to a NordVPN server in your home country and safely enjoy content as if you never left. So what are you waiting for? Visit nordvpn.com/Barca now to get this special birthday deal. Shield your data from snoops and criminals with NordVPN's state-of-the-art encryption. Safely listen to podcasts, stream shows, or simply browse in complete privacy. Again, visit nordvpn.com/Barca. The link is in the show notes. Get NordVPN now and enjoy a safe and private online experience. All right, last night, Barcelona got the 2-1 victory in the last minute. And Troy Cadet joins me as he was there live and in person. So, Troy, how are you doing? Bon dia.
Bon dia. I'm doing fantastic today. Amazing.
Yeah, so you were lucky enough to go to the match. You shared some great video in our WhatsApp group, which was awesome. Your first impressions about last night, now we are, you know, the next morning kind of with that hangover of last night's victory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so far from when I've been out and about this morning, the city is still abuzz from that game. And it was like I was putting in a WhatsApp group. You could feel the buzz, you know, Friday, especially, and then going into Saturday, you could just feel the environment. You could just feel the, there was millions of people here. Like I've never seen this many people here before, and chants always were. It would randomly break out across the city wherever you were, and people were just ready. You could feel it. So I knew that it would be an incredible atmosphere in the Camp Nou.
Was this your first Clásico?
First Clásico, yes.
Oh, yep. Wow. Nice, yep. Nice.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, you know, there's been a lot of this feeling outside, obviously on social media, that last night felt like a final. The way maybe Barcelona approached it and maybe the way Madrid didn't approach it. How did that feel to you in the Camp Nou last night?
Yeah. Oh, the crowd for sure. The crowd for sure. I mean, even the buildup, like, you know, walking into the stadium, we took a train for about half the way and then got off. And actually we walked through some neighborhoods. It was about a 20-minute walk, 'cause I just wanted to experience that walk up. You know, to see what it was like, and in the buildup outside the stadium was amazing. You know, they had the flares going, you know, down some streets, they were chanting, you know, there's a couple blocks away, you know, in either directions, or, you know, little restaurants and bars and things like that. And they were all full. People were all, you know, out in full gear, Barca gear. It's funny because, you know, when you come here, like one of the things I was telling my family is, you know, on a regular day, you don't see a lot of people wearing Barcelona, you know, jerseys or anything like that. Like, you just don't. It's super cosmopolitan here. And here comes, you know, here comes Sunday, and then that's all you saw were Barcelona jerseys, people wearing them all, you know, everywhere. So it was like a complete turnaround. So, but you could feel it. I mean, we got there really early, just because obviously, you know, we didn't have anything else to do, and sure. I wanted to see the whole environment. And I thought that we would be, I knew that there would be some people there before us, but there was, I mean, so many people already there, like I think we got there about 4 hours before the match started. And incredible, just incredible, people everywhere.
So let's get into last night's match. Obviously, you know, we were talking about this prior to the buildup of just what we were expecting to see. I definitely thought that Barcelona would be much improved to what we saw in the Copa del Rey first leg, just because we were a little bit healthier. But let's kind of pinpoint some of the matchups of last night, and especially, again, Araujo and Vinicius. And Araujo, again, shuts down Vinicius. Obviously, Vinicius, you know, gets credit for that goal, but that was so fluky of the way that happened. Yeah. I don't know if you were able to see the replay of that, but Araujo last night, again, just locked down Vinicius. Vinicius was super ineffective last night. How was that watching that in person? And just like me when I was at the Camp Nou a couple of weeks ago, how impressive is Araujo in person?
The dude's a beast. Well, and I saw him driving out, you know, out of training on Saturday. So I saw him there. So I thought that was pretty cool. But on the pitch, my God, he's a beast. I mean, the dude is huge. You know, first of all, he's a big guy. And the speed, you know, there's a lot of times where it would look like Vinny was going to get around the corner on him and he would turn and get there before him. And I was just like, how can a guy that big be running like that? And just physically dominated Vinicius the whole entire night. I mean, that's why Vinicius can't play against him, because he just physically gets up on him and just pushes him around. And it's unbelievable. That own goal happened actually right in front of us. We were looking right down from our corner right on that. It was super freak play. I mean, it was just, you know, just probably one of the – well, it's one of those Madrid things, right? They just kick the ball at a guy's face and it just happens to go in. I mean, it totally Madrid. But outside of that, just completely owned the whole night. I mean, he just owned him. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and on that goal, like, Vinicius was celebrating as though he – was 100% knew that was going to happen. And again, I, you know, last night he had two shots and, you know, they're very ineffective. And I think when Madrid is completely out of that option with Vinicius, they have to look for something else. And they weren't able to do that until the second half, when it was completely wide open and going back and forth. But, you know, for, I would say, the first 65 minutes, Barcelona's defense had him in check, because every time, like you said, every time he tried to make that one corner move, Araujo was always there ready for to block that or to have him pass it off. And he had to pass it off many, many times. Any other matchups that you saw there that in person, maybe we didn't see on TV, or something that stood out for you in the matchup of last night's Clásico?
Yeah, I was, when we were walking out, we were talking, you know, with people about man of the match. And obviously you get the goal scorers that are up there. But for me, Frankie was everywhere. Frankie owned that midfield like I haven't seen him do in a long time. And obviously, you know, Madrid's got players that are aging and things like that, but he was everywhere on both sides. He was roaming, you know. Busquets was, you know, somewhat staying, you know, in the same, you know, general area like he normally does, but Frankie was roaming everywhere because, you know, Gavi was trying to push forward. He was doing his thing. So that leaves a lot of open area for Frankie to move around in. And on both the offense and defensive side, he was everywhere. And a thing just was on Twitter probably about 10 minutes ago that showed, like, you know how that's his, the heat map of where he was. It's the whole area, like from box to box, the whole middle of the field. It was, for me, he was the man of the match. Incredible player. Not so much a matchup per se, but Madrid's midfield, they just couldn't, you know, he was moving around so much that they, you know, they couldn't man mark him with one person per se.
Yeah.
And he was moving that they had troubles understanding where he was going to be because he had such freedom to move around. So watching him was amazing last night.
Yeah, especially when Ter Stegen was in trouble, Frankie was always the outlet for him at the beginning. And I think another wrinkle to Frankie's game lately is that I think Madrid playing defense is always anticipating Frankie to go short, right? Just like any Barca midfielder, rather than taking the 1v1. And I think Frankie taking those opportunities where, like you said, he was going from box to box, but when he did, he chose the right moments to take the 1v1 and go up the field. And by doing that, all of a sudden put so much pressure on Madrid's defense. And I have to agree, for me, man of the match goes to Frankie de Jong, because I think he was so vital in so many of the counters that we had when we were dangerous, but also most importantly, just leading those attacks. Because the other person that did not have a good match last night, and this is, again, when it's at this elite level, for me, was Busquets. And I know he was at fault for a lot of plays last night that literally went the other way for counterattacks. And to me, I can't imagine if Kessie starts last night, do we have a better coverage in midfield?
Yeah. I think that we do. And, you know, I've been critical of Busquets too. I've been trying to relax on that a little bit because he is a club legend. Obviously, I want to give him his respect because a lot of guys in the WhatsApp group give me flack for it. He did have a couple good defensive plays in key moments, but when we were pinned back, you know, deep into our side, you know, he stepped up. But there was times where we were trying to, like you mentioned, we were trying to move the ball forward, and he just make these errant passes that were like, "What are you, like?" I know you see the field probably better than anybody, and I know that he's scanning all the time. I was watching his head move around the whole entire game, and you know, but he would just make these passes, and then obviously he had that, you know, very bad defensive play on. Obviously, the goal was disallowed, but on that second half Madrid goal, where he tried to take like a big step, like way up the pitch, and there was this green grass behind him. And it was, of course, that was like really bad. So it's like with him, it's a 1-to-1, right? For everything that he does good, he does something bad. And that's really not, you know, obviously what Barca needs long-term. I think we've talked about it so many times, you know, Xavi's still going to give him the green light to go in. Kessié would, I think in my opinion, would have given us a better player on the pitch last night. I think that he has the ability to go box to box where Busquets does not. But I don't think that we'll see this year. Certainly we got to see what happens with this contract moving forward, but I don't think that you'll see Kessié get too many starts over Busquets just because of who he is and Xavi's trust in him. I think that he's decided I'll take the 1-to-1, like I'll take the good and I'll take the bad because, you know, in hopes that we get more good than we get bad. But he definitely was, like I said, with the exception of those two, he had two or three plays, you know, one, he did like a 180 turn.
Yeah.
It looked like his younger years, you know, he's like, whoa, I haven't seen him do that in a while. You know, you'd seen him do that before. But you get those plays, and then, like I said, you get the really bad ones where we're really lucky. Asensio was totally offside. There's no argument there. But if he played that right, you know, they would have went up 2-1 and might have been a different game.
That's the thing is, in this type of Barcelona now, right, this team right now, we are not, especially against higher caliber teams, we're not having the possession of 80% like we used to back in the day, right? These type of matches are more back and forth counters and this, and it just does not suit Busquets's ultimate skill, right? That's really what it comes down to. And last night we saw that on display, especially in the last 10 to 15 minutes where he had to, you know, we would go on the attack and we would lose the ball and it's all of a sudden going the other way, right? And that happened for a 5-minute span where it was going back and forth. And that's where a younger person, maybe like Kessié, gets that, and we sub out Busquets, and we get better coverage, you know. And this goes to my next question with Gavi, because Gavi, I think, had an interesting match last night. I think he did some good things well, but man, he needs to calm the F down because he is losing his mind off dumb things, you know. And I know, it's a lot of pressure. He's still young. I got it.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, we've seen the clips now of him going and looking for Ceballos, right, in the back, like a cheap shot. But on top of that, just some of the aggression, I feel there's a time and a place for that. And I think he still needs to find that because, again, the looseness of how he plays, he's ultimately going to rack up yellow cards and miss matches, crucial matches, where we absolutely need him to fill that void in the midfield.
Yeah, there's that. And then something that I certainly noticed being able to see the entire pitch last night is he'll take himself out of position. He'll take himself out of position to go out of his way to go do something that he shouldn't be doing. And so, yeah, he's, you know, I love the kid. I'll just put it out there. Like, he's one of my absolute favorites. I love the heart and the intensity that he puts out there. And quite frankly, I think this Barca team needed somebody like him that can get everybody going, you know, to the intensity level to match the opponents. But like you said, how many yellows has he gotten this year where it's like, dude, that was just really unnecessary. Like, you didn't need to do that. How he didn't get a yellow for going after Ceballos, I don't know, because it was clear as day. And the whole crowd was just going ballistic after he did that too. So it's like, I don't know how the referees, like, you know, all three of them didn't, even the fourth didn't see what he did. Because it was crystal clear what he did. I mean, he turned all the way to his left and went right after him. But like I said, he takes himself out of the play.
Yeah.
He's off trying to, you know, do superhero things, when you gotta become a smarter player and think like, okay, if I take myself out of position, is that going to create an opportunity for the other team to counterattack or create a goal scoring opportunity by doing that? Again, I'll say it. I'm sure that Xavi is trying to get him to settle down. And I think that he is somewhat, but he has a lot of steps to go to maturity to get there for sure.
You know, it's one of those things, because last night in the match commentary, they went to the sideline reporter and she said, yeah, Xavi's here yelling at Gavi to calm down. And I said, maybe we need like a red flag, you know, on the sideline to like let him know to calm like the F down, stop. Right? Because this is the thing, you know, I honestly think, you know, maybe if there was a veteran above him, that Gavi wouldn't be getting all this playing time. And so maybe, you know, we're kind of in the situation where we absolutely need him, because obviously he's, you know, one of our most important midfielders going forward. But at the same time, you know, there's no way to kind of quote unquote punish him for these kind of actions where he can learn, because he's continuing to play. You know, with a younger player, usually with this amount of aggression that's going on, a coach or manager would more normally sub him off and make him learn from that experience. But since we don't have that luxury, you know, he's basically learning on the fly, and he just has to watch out, because that could have easily been a red card. I mean, it should have been a red card for the way he just, you know, went and looked for him out of the play. And like you said, I'm really curious again of how it was missed by the referees. But
well, again, if I can add to that real quick,
sure.
You know, I was looking back to the Busquets thing, and not to, I'm kind of counteracting myself here, where I said I wanted to lay off him a little bit, but at those types of moments, I was looking for leadership out of him. I wanted to see, because I've always blasted him for not displaying leadership but again, I can only see the TV view, but I watched it, you know, I obviously was there physically watching it. And those are the moments where a captain goes up and tells him, hey, you have to stop. We need you. We cannot be, you know, go down a man and have 10 versus 11. We need, none of that happened until Kessié got on the field, and he got on the field and he barked out. He pointed more directions in the small amount of time that he was on the pitch than Busquets did the whole entire game. And I can't let Frankie off the hook here too. Like, Frankie's a veteran too. Like, he can be doing that as well. And I didn't see that from him at all. So, you know, those two need to take a little bit of responsibility and help cooling him down, because, you know, they're in the same positions. They're, you know, that's their unit or whatever. So, you know, they're the leadership on the pitch. They need to settle him down. And Lewandowski, for that fact too, he's been here long enough now that they can all go to him and say, cool it, like, chill. We need you for the whole game. Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, because, you know, especially like, for example, Frankie has enough experience on this team. He's gone through the transition, and I would expect him to be more of a leader, especially since he's such a good player, but maybe it's just not his personality. And that's, one of the things, in the scouting of these players, that we need to find a couple more leaders, because that goes to, let's talk about Frank. You know, Frank is now becoming a classical legend with that own goal in the Copa del Rey. I mean, he, you know, even though the goal is not quote unquote credited to him, he made that play happen with the play. And last night, just, I mean, I don't know if you were able to see the replay, the millimeter that he was able to get that off over Mendy's foot is really impressive. But again, he was in the right position. Let's just talk about that goal, because the buildup was beautiful. It was on a counter. And of course, Balde and Lewandowski team up, and Balde just that the style of pass that he was able to, if you watch the replay, he actually looks up. What a novel idea, Troy. What a novel idea. He looks up and points it and sees it, and then puts the ball perfectly. And Frank with a nice finish. And I imagine, you know, obviously I was going crazy because of, you know, obviously the time and everything. I mean, how was it in the stadium? Was it just, you know, in all your sporting events that you've attended, I'm sure it's probably going to be up there for you.
Yeah, it's probably the top. I'll be honest. I mean, I've seen a couple games that end in a, you know, last second victory or score or whatever, but with everything that I experienced, and obviously it's the freshest one, just the way that the crowd was going, and you know, the electricity that was in there. And of course the goal happened right in front of me. So, and the whole night I had been barking for Balde to take that corner. For some reason, he would not take the corner. He would not take, he would stop. Like, he would get the ball, he'd move forward a little bit. And he would not take Carvajal on, and I couldn't understand it. I'm like, why are you not taking that corner? So finally, of course, it was thanks to the back heel by Lewandowski, he was, you know, finally brought it in the box. But I don't understand. Maybe Chavi has told him not to because of the defensive liability, not to push it forward. And luckily on that play, he did, because, I mean, he's the one who makes the assist and, you know, brings it down to the box and makes that assist. But that place, I mean, it was like a champagne bottle popped, you know, or top popped off. Like, I mean, it was crazy in there. They were trying to light flares in there, which is a big no-no in the Camp Nou. So, of course, they, you know, they're rushing to put them out down in the supporters group. It was fantastic. I mean, people, the one thing, you know, maybe I'm going off on a tangent here, but the one thing is, like, the crowd never – there was just a few times where, like, they got quiet. Like, after the first time Madrid scored, we had to, like, you know, people were kind of more griping, you know, than anything. And then they ramped back up and got back into it. But that whole second half, of course, right after, of course, that goal got disallowed, and then that place was going crazy. And then it was, like, the momentum button, like, totally switched. Like, we were pushing hard. Because, you know, prior to that, I could tell, like, Madrid's going for the win. Like, they want this game. And then, like, they deflated when the goal got disallowed. They were kind of in chaos, and we, you know, kind of took advantage of that. But, and the other thing I was going to say is, the whole game, I was trying to understand the difference between how is Madrid score so many goals? What do they do differently, you know, versus what we do? And they always have guys running into the box. You know, if it's a corner, if they're pushing to the middle, there's always guys moving to the box. And that's why I typed in the WhatsApp group, we still have what I call Messi syndrome. We're trying to force it to Lewandowski, and he's trying to do his thing. He's trying to be too fancy, but we don't ever have anybody else running into the box. And here comes Kessié with his style, right? Busquets isn't going to do that. Or Roberto, you know, that was a good goal that he had, but he wasn't really running into the box either. Frankie's off doing everything, you know, from box to box to move the ball around and play defense. So who else was going to fill the void? And Kessié does that, you know, versus the other two. So that's why, going back to what we started, we were talking about him, about would he have made a difference in this game? I absolutely think so, because we had crosses, we had good passes. We just didn't have enough people that were crashing the box to get a goal. And look what happens. He comes on and scores just a few moments later, doing that exact same thing. So, it was amazing, though. I mean, the place just went, it just erupted.
I mean, it definitely, I would have to say, for the last couple matches on TV, you could definitely hear the crowd was way into it, especially in the beginning when they sung the hymn and everything. You could just tell it just felt more important, because obviously it was Liga and everything. Now you transitioned perfectly for me, because I want to speak about Lewandowski. Now, on Friday's show, I spoke to Roy about Lewandowski and how we were kind of expecting him to deliver the goods now on the big stage. This is why he came, right? He wanted to be part of this event, this classical event. I think, obviously, take away the back heel assist build up play, but like you said, I think there is this new idea that he's coming to try to help the ball all the time. And I just don't understand what the purpose of that is, because as I was asking my friend last night, we were watching the match, I said, when you think of Lewandowski, do you think of quick feet passing? I don't. So I don't know why. I don't know what he's doing. And also,
he's not.
And also, the other thing, he's not really that type of traditional back to goal striker that holds the ball perfectly and dishes it off. You know, that's not really his thing. So I don't know what is going on lately where he is trying to get involved in the buildup, because like you said, when Rafinha breaks free and he looks up, there's no one there. You know, when Gavi's breaking free, there's no one there because Lewandowski's trying to show in the middle. And I just don't get it. I don't know if you saw it more in person, but when I saw it in person too, I don't understand what's the purpose, because his main goal should be to push that center back pocket and give more space to Frankie when he drives in, and that's just not happening.
He's holding way up on the top of the box. He's trying to, we saw, I mean, everybody watched the game last night, and obviously the last, I'd say, a handful of games, he's trying to, well, a couple things, you know, he's trying to do tiki-taka, right? So he's trying to receive the ball and do a little quick pass or whatever. The problem is the whole night, Madrid usually had two guys by him. They weren't like completely man marking him, where somebody was on him the whole time, but they usually have two guys like within, we'll say, 5 yards of him on either side. So anytime he got the ball, he always had somebody on him. And that's not his game. He doesn't have the Barcelona skill set of, you know, the touches and the passes and the receiving and the things like that. So I just don't know if that's because we think Xavi thinks that they got, you know, we need to bring him back further because, like what we already talked about, nobody else is filling that spot. Obviously Pedri would be, and that's Pedri's, you know, go-to. That's his area right there where he makes things happen. So I think maybe the game plan is, you know, until he's there, you know, Lewandowski's got to come a little bit deeper and get the ball, but it's just simply not working. It's just simply not working because he is not a let's take on a guy type of player. He's a guy where you're hitting him in stride or you're hitting him in a pass where he can go up and get it and shoot the ball quickly. That's who he is. He's not a guy like he's not going to stand, you know, toe to toe with somebody and try to make a move on him and get around him. That's not who he is. He can't do it. I physically saw him last night. I'm like, this guy cannot, he's not going to make a move on anybody here. He's got to use angles and things like that to be effective. And by having him come so deep and without having anybody else moving forward, there's no one else for him to play, you know, triangles with or angles with. And so it's just not working. So I think it's, my gut says, it's like I said, it's just a holdover until Pedri comes back. And then I think that maybe we see him go back to what he was doing before. I hope I'm right. But I guess we will. I was hoping to see last night, obviously. Pedri was one of the main players I certainly wanted to see, but we'll see him here shortly, I think.
The thing, too, is it's such a weird chemistry that's happening with Rafinha and Lewandowski because at one point it seems as though they never played with each other, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking back, especially on that counter where they crossed each other and they passed it off and it was just and everyone just moans, right? This idea of not understanding who the player is. And this goes with Rafinha and Lewandowski. For example, there was a pass where Sergio Roberto gave to Rafinha, and he's playing it to his feet rather into space, right? And I just feel like we don't understand our attacker's qualities because, for example, with Lewandowski, I'm not going to put it into space because he's older. He's not going to be able to beat people 1v1.
Yeah.
I want to give it to his feet so that he can do the turn that he's normally done all his career or put it in a way where he can shield his body and get a shot off. And I just feel like this attacking chemistry still is off because it's now, you know, we're now in March. You know, this is not October where you could say, it's going to come. It's going to come. It's been a lot of matches with Rafinha and Lewandowski, and I still feel like they don't know each other's best attributes and how to, you know, they don't have that non-physical communication that goes on with wingers and strikers. And will it? I mean, when is it going to come? How many more matches do we need?
Anytime Madrid was an attack, it felt fluid. Anytime Barcelona was an attack, it felt cluttered. It really did. It felt like, you know, how many times have you seen like a youth team or something like that where you can tell they've just started playing together? You know, they have talent, but they don't know each other yet. They don't know each other's motions and movements. And that's exactly what it felt like last night for Barcelona. Like there's no connect, like you just said, there's no connection whatsoever. Like they weren't like, oh, I know that, you know, he likes it on his left foot here. He likes to do, there was nothing. There was just like they were like, okay, I wonder if this will work. And then they, you know, they'd make a pass or make a move or something. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's something that they are not practicing or not working on, but there's definitely no, even let's just throw using the Pedri as an excuse. Let's throw that out the window. There's definitely something amiss on that front side for sure.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about all the high quality attackers that have come through Barcelona in the last 15 years, even on the counters, there was always a feeling that the talent was so good they could figure something out on the fly. You know, you're just playing free-form football, this type of idea. And I just think Rafinha and Lewandowski, for whatever reason, it's just oil and water. You know, the way they want to attack. And it's so weird because those are the opportunities where they should be, you know, salivating, taking those opportunities because they're really high quality. And every time I see it now, I'm more surprised if they even get to the box, you know?
Yeah.
Because if they get to the box, it's like, okay, we got to the box. Let's try to do something. Because more times out of not, it's not even getting that far because of a screw up of a pass or a run or something. And it's happening quite often. And last night, you know, especially when we were down 1-0, where we were having those opportunities and you're like, oh, it was never building up. And so I don't know, there's still something off. I know we're really dependent on Pedri, which is, I mean, he's a great player and everything, but still we need to, you know, when Pedri needs rest and so forth, we're going to have to figure out some situation where our attack, because ultimately our goal scoring is so down right now. It's so down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it just felt so cluttered. It almost felt like, you know, the beginning of the season and the whole front line was like new players and they just needed time to, you know, work with each other and get a feel for each other. But here we are very deep into the season. And they should certainly know how to play with each other by now. So that is something that is worrisome.
I mean, still, Lewandowski has 2 goals since the World Cup, and one was a penalty kick. I mean, so those are, you know, he's definitely in the drought right now, and he needs to break out because he's not getting opportunities still, because last night he still had some clear chances where he could have – I mean, he had the one shot early. That was a really nice hit. But again, you know, he had that volley, and I know it's a volley. It's hard, but that's why we brought him. You're Lewandowski. Yeah. You're not just some guy who's, you know, off the street. That's why you're Lewandowski. Right. But let's finish off with some flowers. Obviously, 2 flowers for me. The defense continues to play at enormous level, especially last night when it was so much chaos in those last 15 minutes where, you know, we were like the dam, ready to break, but we were still able to hold it. But the other person I want to highlight too is Christensen, because you know, we talked about his entry into the team at the season. It's like, okay, this is kind of a weird signing, because at Chelsea, he was above average. And I don't know if, as we talked about with whoever is playing in that position, as long as we have Balde, Koundé, and Araujo there, that defender can just focus on positioning and not worry about balls behind because of the speed around him. But anything stand out for you about Christensen last night? Again, another solid performance. He does everything you need him to do as a defender. And again, he was able to shut down Benzema pretty much for the whole night.
Yeah. I mean, you already just said it. The guy was always in the right position at the right time. Never makes mistakes. That's the biggest thing about him. He does not make mistakes. He's just rock solid, you know, and like you said, you got the other guys, you got the speed and you got the intense guys around him whenever we need to shuffle them around. And he's just always right there, rock solid. I mean, talk about, you know, this is the club that he's wanted to play for his whole entire life. He grew up a Barcelona fan. And, you know, sometimes you get people like that. They're like, man, this is where I've always wanted to be. And they just, you know, there's just the right fit for them, the right feeling that's like they've made it. And that's his case. Like, I mean, talk about Barcelona was just absolutely lucky to to get him in and lock him in for, you know, no signing fee, a free transfer. And I'd expect to see him here for, you know, a super long time. Because think about it. I mean, Barcelona was still talking about trying to get, you know, some additional center backs in that January window.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they, you know, even early on in the season had the expectations or understood like how good he would be for us. But we'll just talk about that back four in general. Like, we went from having a back four that was in shambles, you know, last year and even the year before, to look at them now. And with the caveat that I still think that we need a traditional, you know, right back out there. I still think that Koundé should play that spot. You know, a lot of people want, but let's say they find, you know, like Arnaud Martinez from Girona, bring him in or something like that. We have one of the, you know, we could have, and they're getting there. We could have one of the best back lines in all of football. And, you know, I already think right now that Araujo, and I've been saying it for the last 6 months, is top three, if not the top center back in the world today. You got Koundé, with, you know, his only caveat is, you know, sometimes he just loses his footwork. He just looks like he gets a little bit confused. That's just something that, concentration, whatever it may be. He played great last night. You know, one of the main things that I saw for them, and one of the biggest problems that Barcelona's had, you know, as they had that defensive decline like the last 3 to 4 years, is, you know, talking about the offense we were talking about, these guys are the exact opposite. I saw Koundé and Araujo switch so many times because of where, you know, Vinicius would go. And it wasn't like pointing. There wasn't any pointing needed. There wasn't any yelling. There wasn't anything. Like, it just happened. They just did it. And then, you know, if Araujo needed to go out wide, because Madrid was trying to do some trickery out there where they were trying to pull Araujo up and then overload on that left side a couple times. I don't know why they didn't do it more. Honestly, I was like, why? They should be doing that this whole game, and probably would have worked, but they didn't. And then again, Christensen would always be in that right spot too. Like, he would recognize where they are, and he would just shift over into the middle. Balde would come and shift in, or they'd shift out, whatever. I mean, they looked like a well-oiled machine, and obviously, you know, the results that they've given us for this whole entire year, you know, speak volumes to where they are. But, you know, I mean, it's just unbelievable to me, like, the difference that a year and a half makes, or even a year, we'll just say even a year.
Like, 6 months.
Except for when Xavi goes and with his brilliance and puts, you know, Alonso in there, the whole thing. But obviously, I understand you got to rotate players. I can't play every minute. But watching those guys, it was like artwork last night. I mean, just the way that they moved and communicated without having to verbally, you know, or physically communicate was amazing. It was really amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I, you know, while you were speaking about this, I was trying to remember. I was seeing the exact same thing. It's this ability to cover and speak without speaking, right? And that's what you need to do on defense. And that's what the attack needs to follow suit with this understanding, this chemistry that hopefully will evolve and hopefully happen quicker. The last flowers I want to give is obviously Xavi. I mean, through the ups and downs of this season, obviously with the European turmoils that we've been critical about what he's been doing and so forth, after all this, he's won 3 Clásicos in a calendar year, which is crazy. And again, like I was telling my friend last night, there is just something with this team that we just match up really well against Madrid. And that's just a fact.
Yeah.
And that, regardless of, you know, what the rivalry is and stuff, just on paper and on the field. Because think about it, you know, a couple weeks ago with the Copa del Rey first leg, we brought out the hospital team, right? The team that was holding on for dear life. And we were still able to get a victory somehow, right? And now I believe that gave us the confidence and momentum for these next Clásicos, because now we are becoming a stronger team. And you saw it last night, we were able to have more possession, even though it was, you know, a little bit closer. But again, you know, in after Madrid scored, we saw the team just have that confidence where they were able to put it together and especially get that goal before half. And again, you just got to give Xavi credit for last night's performance again, because ultimately, we, you know, there's all these kind of metrics that we measure, right? It's La Liga performance, Champions League, and then obviously the Clásicos, and he's hitting 2 out of the 3 right now.
Yeah. It's amazing what a victory against Real Madrid brings to you, though, doesn't it? It's like everything's okay.
For sure.
As, you know, as long as we beat them in El Clásico, and especially in what it would be arguably one of Barca's biggest games in the past, I don't even know how many years you want to go back. I mean, this was everybody in this area was talking about how big of a game this is, like what it meant, like a victory tonight. It was almost like a stamp of approval. Okay. Like, yeah, we've already beat them a few times this year, but here we are at home. You know, we that means with the victory that La Liga's all but tied up, right? You know, Madrid's still moving on in the Champions League, but, you know, we can beat them. It was like all these feelings all wrapped in one. And it was just like you forget the, you know, how frustrated we were, like with the Man United, you know, games or whatever. And and certainly, you know, I think that we obviously still have some holes on this roster. We still have some aging players. We still have young players. If you take a step back and take yourself out of the emotional, you know, seat and take a look at our squad, there's still things that need to, you know, take place for us to really compete with those top teams. And albeit Man United had scored more points, you know, coming out of the World Cup, you know, break than any other team in Europe. And, you know, we were one goal away from, you know, tying them and seeing what happened. So we were right there with them, right? They're the hottest team. So yeah, what, you know, here, obviously, you know, in Barcelona, everybody, you know, any conversations I had, all they cared about was La Liga. They just beat Madrid and win La Liga. You know what I mean? I would start to talk about Europa League and it was totally dismissed. Like, it was like, how disgusting. I mean, like, don't even go there, you know, American boys. So, So it was funny. So yeah, I mean that. So obviously, if we're looking at, you know, Chavi, and if we're looking at, has everything been a success, you know, for this year, and how are we feeling moving forward? I think all everything points, you know, to positive, right? Like we said, they've all but wrapped up La Liga. It's like 99%,
yeah,
certain,
yeah,
that they will. I mean, I'm sure they will. And then we'll see what happens with the squad, you know, in this off season. There's a player that would, I think, would like to come back here and change some dynamics of the squad. And I think that we probably have to do some sales, and we'll see what happens. But everything, I think, is certainly looking on the up and up, and Chavi has some learning to do too. And I think he is learning. But I think that what he's for the most part, you know, putting, you know, his best 11 on the pitch that he can, you know, depending on what's going on outside of those, you know, that first Man United game where it was pretty questionable. But but if you're a Barca fan listening to this, you have to be encouraged, and you have to be like, I think, you know, we're on the way back. Are we at the pinnacle yet? Absolutely not.
No,
but we're certainly on the way back.
Yeah. And thinking about that starting lineup against Manchester United, I mean, imagine if Balde starts that match, right? I mean, that just gives you that confidence about that team going forward. But anyway, I mean, all is right in the world for today, you know,
today,
especially
yeah.
Nasri Koule, and just having the bragging rights, because ultimately, sure, Madrid can have the bragging rights of the Champions Leagues that they've won in the last 10 years. Great. But we have such an incredible record against them in that. And that ultimately is a better bragging right, right? I mean, that is the ultimate bragging right. We have a matchup here against Elche the coming weekend. So Barcelona get to rest and kind of ride high. And then there's the Clásico of the second leg, which I'm really excited about because, you know, as I told, I just think this team is trending up. Hopefully we'll get Pedri back, and that'll just give us another push in through that midfield to even have more effectiveness. And again, it's at the Camp Nou, and we're able to just play much better as a team against Madrid. So how much longer are you going to be in Barcelona?
So today will be our last full day, and then we fly out tomorrow midday. So we're certainly going to enjoy our time here.
Yeah, we're on a video call right now, but Troy is on a rooftop terrace right now, and Barcelona looks very good on you, Troy.
Oh, I know it. I already told my family. You guys can go home if you'd like. I'm not going back. I'm staying right here. They're going to have to peel me out of this city.
Well, thanks for finding a moment to speak about last night's Clásico and sharing your experience.
Absolutely.
We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.